Hello everyone, welcome to this episode of Paddock Pass, the podcast where we talk all things motorsport. I'm your host, Evie Spencer, an aspiring motorsport journalist from the UK, and you can follow me on TikTok, Instagram and YouTube at Evie Spencer Motorsport. Make sure to follow my socials and this podcast for lots of motorsport content. Hope you enjoy! Today I'm here with David. David, would you like to introduce yourself?
I'm David Sullivan, motorsport commentator for the Bambino Kart Championship, Cadet Kart Championship and Junior Kart Championship, as well as the Teesside Sprint Series, and pretty much anything else anybody will ask me to talk about, really.
I love it. So, kind of first off, when and how did you find motorsport?
The family as a whole has always been into motorsport. My dad did autograss when he raced, so I spent a lot of weekends sort of travelling round where my mum and dad are based in North Nottinghamshire, so we'd spend a lot of time at Lincoln Showground and Scunthorpe and tracks like that. My dad raced in a Class 9 special, so I'd spend a lot of weekends watching sort of that type of racing and really spending a lot of time thinking I'd quite like to have a go, but as I sort of grew up at the time, I fell more into football, even though I always had that sort of motorsport interest. So, you know, I think the first time I remember getting up at 5 in the morning, I think I was about 6 or 7 years old to watch what would have been the Australian Grand Prix at Adelaide back then, the final race of the season. So my dad would wake me up and we'd watch that early doors, and then I'd go back to sleep for a few hours because I was only small and very, very tired. But yeah, a lot of it comes through autograss. My middle name is Anthony, after a driver in autograss called Anthony Ross, who his dad and my dad were friends, so that's, we've always had that sort of connection. And now you look at drivers coming through autograss, so like Colin Turkington, his son's doing autograss, so it's always a good grounding for drivers sort of getting used to car handling and stuff, but obviously more recently it's been karting.
Yeah, so have you ever commentated autograss?
I haven't. It's something that I think I'd like to do, and I think because I think my sort of style is very sort of, I like the sort of fast pace where there's a lot of action, and autograss is normally like 5 or 6 laps. So I think it would suit it quite well. But I think you sort of need to be in that sort of environment. And similar to how I am with karting at the minute, you sort of get to know all the drivers, all the colours, helmet colours, suit colours. So you get to pick them up. I think it'd be something where I'd have to spend a lot of time in it to be proficient in terms of sort of spotting everything really quickly, which yeah. I think in karting I've sort of got to that now. It does become a lot harder when you end up with a lot of people in the same sort of team colours. But yeah, autograss, something that we still have a little bit of interest. And I took my lad to a Bambino test day at Blyton, and there's an autograss track at Blyton with Scunthorpe. So we spent a couple of hours afterwards watching that. He took a bit of an interest in it. So we always dip in and watch it every now and again.
Yeah. Is it nice kind of having your son interested in motorsport as well as you?
Yeah, we love it. As a family, it's great. My dad runs him on a race weekend, so he races in a lot of series that I commentate on, but sometimes I'll commentate and he'll go off and race somewhere else and my dad will take him. So it's really nice that not only does like I see him get to race, but that him and his granddad sort of get that type of bond as well.
Yeah.
So I think that's really, really nice. But it's also been nice, obviously, that I've been able to watch his sort of progression from when he first started and he was at the back, and now he's coming through. And at the moment, fingers crossed, he's leading his club championship. So hopefully that'll, you know, the final 2 rounds, he goes okay there. He's had some good pace running national level, but not really the look that his pace has really deserved all season. But who knows what next year brings. Hopefully we'll want to go and do 1 or 2 rounds of Tillotson's T4, and then maybe go do Nations Cup at the end of next year, hopefully, for him.
Yeah.
Just to sort of broaden his horizon a little bit. But as long as he's enjoying his racing, that's all that really matters for us. You know, it's the day that he says, I don't want to do it anymore, will be the day he stops. You know, he's not racing because I'm involved. He's racing because he wants to race. And, you know, if he says he doesn't want to, then we'll stop it there.
Yeah, and it's nice that it's been kind of passed down through generations as well, and that all of you can bond over that.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't do a lot of racing. You know, I didn't own my first kart until I was like late 20s. I'm 38 now, so I did 3 or 4 seasons in pro kart, but you know, never raced a Rotax, never raced a real national championship. I've just had a lot of interest in it. And that's sort of where things sort of come to where I am now in commentary. I did 3 or 4 years of karting, and then as soon as I realised, you know, that I had the bug for commentary, that was it. I've not raced properly since. I've done one or two hire kart events. I was lucky enough to be invited with Alpha Live to go and do the Le Mans 24-hour hire kart race in July on the circuit Alain Prost, which is inside the actual Le Mans circuit. So myself, James and Luke, the two guys that run Alpha Live, and Tom, who I commentate with at Teesside, Ian, one of our camera ops, the five of us went and we did that, which was a great event and a great opportunity for us to just go and have a bit of fun.
So what's kind of the most exciting race you've ever like commentated on or been to?
Oh, the most exciting race I've ever commentated on, without a doubt, would have been the Minimax final at Ella Park for JKC last season. Lewis Goff, Jared Fox-Whiteley going into the final with a handful of points between them. They crossed the line at the time. It was a one-point swing in Lewis Goff's favour. Post-race penalties meant I think it went out to a massive 3 points was the gap between them. But they went on to that final lap knowing that whichever driver finished in front of the other would take the championship. But the thing as well, there was a mix in there. We had Oliver Fabricius, Leon Barlow were both challenging for the win at the end of the day. So there was just more than just the top two involved. But yeah, without a doubt. And I think Ella Park as well played a massive part in that as a track. It really does aid good racing. Every corner was an overtaking opportunity, which we saw. I think all four of them throughout the race led at one point throughout the race. It was a really, really intense battle. And normally I like to sort of build up towards it, but I think I'd hit peak excitement by about lap four. And luckily as well, we were on the PA, which always sort of helps bring an event up. And I think I remember with about four laps to go, me shouting over the PA system that if you're in the paddock and you put in your cart the way, leave it where it is, get to trackside. This is going to be one of the most intense finals that you'll see. It really was. Like I say, it went to the wire. 1 point between them as they crossed the line. It was an unbelievable race for me to commentate on.
Yeah, that is crazy. I don't think I could handle watching that. Never mind commentating it. So can you kind of tell the listeners about like your job and like what it involves?
So I'll start with the day job because commentary is not a full-time effort for me. I work in construction as a day job, but then we get to Fridays, Saturdays and Sundays and commentary is where. So the thing for me and what helps as well is like with my lad racing in a lot of championships, it does mean that I get to spend more time at a track. But even earlier on this season where I've been to events where he's not been at, I will still come on the Saturday just so that I can watch the racing so that I know what's happened.
Yeah,
you know, I'm making notes. As you know, we're obviously recording this at the final round, but you'll have seen me for the last hour walking around with a laptop in my hand.
Yeah.
Typing numbers into spreadsheets because we've got championships to be decided today and tomorrow. And then I've got team bosses coming to me saying, you know, where does my driver need to finish? And I was stood for the Minimax final pretty much between two team bosses, both who were looking at me for confirmation of results and whether their drivers have either won or are still in the championship battle. So that's the sort of really intense thing about it is, you know, I go into a day of commentary trying to obviously just do the best I can, but knowing that there's people that are sort of relying on you for information.
Yeah.
You know, particularly when we're at tracks where we've got a PA system and we're able to sort of build the event up, and you know, we go back to Clay and we've got drivers that are crossing the line, and you can tell them because I've got the spreadsheet in front of me that as soon as they cross the line whether they've won a championship or not, rather than having to wait 40 minutes for points to get published and things like that, I think sort of helps as well. I just love it.
Yeah.
I genuinely love it. It's like, you know, like, I don't even mind admitting it. Like, I drive like 40 minutes to work and back every day, and like, sometimes I'll just sit and I'll practice.
Yeah.
And I'm like, sounds really weird. It's like I'm 38, but I've only been commentating for 5 years.
Yeah.
You know, I'll sit and I'll be like, right, but I'll sort of practice like, intros into a race day and how I want to do things, or if we've got championship battles, or you know, whether something that I'll say will fit into somewhere, and I'll have snippets that I want to drop in throughout the day that will just help sell the story of what it is. Because really, like, we do 6 hours of live stream, but it's a 6 hour story of selling the race meeting and also selling a championship. Because, you know, I'm lucky enough to commentate on some really good series that I want more people to come to. And the better we can put on the show, the more people come. And I think that's been proved. You know, we've got final round of the season here for the kart championship. Normally the numbers drop off towards the end of the year, and we've got, I think, our second highest after round one.
Yeah.
A number of entries. I think we've got 177 entries. I think obviously Wilton helps. It's a good track in a central location, which draws everybody in. But I think that's smart booking by the championship to book it in the middle of the country that keeps everybody coming. But yeah, just love it.
Yeah, I think it's good that you like doing it, because if you don't love your job, you're not going to be very good at it.
Yeah, but I've only been commentating now since the start of 2019. And really, I wouldn't say that I looked into it. I got Bolshy one day. Teesside said that they were going to stream their first round of the championship of 2019. And so the post came up. I'd raced there the previous year in Pro Kart a few times, so I knew most of the drivers, and I knew all the cadet drivers as well from watching their races. And they had Chris McCarthy on commentary, who I owe a massive amount to. He's doing F1 Kids for Sky this weekend. Yeah. He's done Formula 2, IndyCar on Sky F1 now. But I sent him a message and just said, I see you're at Teesside this weekend, but I also know that you're from London and might not know a lot of the drivers. I know a lot of the drivers. I can hold a good conversation. I'll come down in the morning if you want, and I can tell you about everybody, and I can do you some notes. He messaged me back and went, oh, I'll ask Alpha. I'll come back to you. And I thought, okay, fair enough. At least he's acknowledged, but I might not hear from him again.
Yeah.
Half an hour later, he messaged me back and went, there's nothing in it for you, but you can come do the day on commentary if you want.
Oh my
and
God.
That was my in, because I asked a question at the age of 33 as to basically, please let me come and do some talking. And it spiraled from there, really. He messaged me then the following round saying, would you like to come again? Bearing in mind that I wasn't put off by the fact the first round I commentated from the back of a van.
Oh my God. Because
at the time that was Luke Alpha drove his Volkswagen van up. So I sat on a ledge of wood that was about 6 inches wide with Luke producing from the front seat and Chris alongside me. So Alpha have come a long way. So we've sort of both grown together into it. He messaged me the following month, went, do you want to come again?
Yeah.
The following month, he was unavailable, so they had another commentator in, so I didn't get that one. The following month, he said, come again. And after that, I got a message from Luke saying, oh, Luke can't do it. Would you like to work with Tom, who I know I work with all the time at Teesside? So we had a good day, really built up a nice rapport, but he wasn't available for the rest of the season. So 5 rounds in, Luke messaged me and went, how do you fancy going on your own? So my fifth commentary was me on my own, having never really done anything like this before. Finished the season. Luke messaged me and went, I think it might be better as a two. I went, oh, thank you. I don't mind now doing it on my own, but as a two, you get that bounce off each other, and you do really get to sort of build, particularly if you get on really well with them, like me and Tom do up at Teesside. I like doing this one on my own because I think it helps as well just keep things fresh, you know, so you're not always working with the same people and things like that. And obviously, I've committed to every round for this year, which is great at CKC, JKC and BKC, because I am able to then be at every round and build it up. Whereas if you're dipping in and out, you don't get the backstory.
Yeah.
Whereas like now, because I've met everybody, now I get people messaging me on Facebook going, oh, my driver's got a new helmet this weekend, or he's got a new suit, or he's changed teams, or I'll get a Facebook message mid-race meeting explaining why they've retired.
Yeah.
And that helps me as well, you know, but they only feel like they can message me because we've built up that rapport, because I'm here on a Thursday night getting to know everybody. And I know lots of other commentators do the same. I'm not saying for 1 minute I'm special, because I'm not.
Yeah.
But because you get to know people in the championships that you do, you then get that level of back and forth.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'll get people message me, or I'll get people message me that aren't involved with a driver, just telling me what's happened with some other people, because they're helping me out, and I think that's wonderful. So
yeah,
just going back to the original point, a massive shout out to Chris McCarthy for giving me an opportunity that he didn't have to give me. You know, he didn't have to do that. He could have just gone, oh, well, thank you for the offer, but no thanks. And this would have never have happened. You know, 5 years down the line, I wouldn't have had the opportunity of doing at least a round of the British Championships, which I did in 2020. I wouldn't have had the opportunity to go and do a little bit of car racing this year. So I picked up Ginetta Juniors at Silverstone just as a bit of luck, really. I got the message on the Friday going, somebody's dropped out. Would you fancy it? And I'm like, yeah, I'm already in the car. I'm walking. So that was a great day. But, you know, and Ginetta Juniors are very much like karting. It's action packed, lap on lap. They slipstream well. So there's overtakes every lap. It doesn't fall into that monotonous sort of field spread.
So
that was really, really exciting as well. So the opportunities I've been given from just asking a question have been really, really good. And I like to do a little bit like, so throughout the year, I've invited a few people into the commentary box for this. I think that's been nice to give them an opportunity. The paddock shows that we do are really good as well.
Yeah.
You know, we'll talk to everybody from, I think today we've been around, we spoke to a few parents, we spoke to drivers, we've interviewed somebody who I only went in, got a 2 week old daughter, and we didn't get much out of her, I'll be honest. She was very quiet. But it's a team boss's partner, because I've been walking around the paddock and I've known that she was expecting. It was great to see for the final round that they've got an addition. So we went in and we had a little chat, and it was great, and it was amusing. So I saw how old is she? She went 2 weeks. I said, wrong answer. She's 4 years and 50 weeks away from a bambino, which is the best way to age any child.
Yeah,
it's how long till they can get them a cart. So. But yeah, it's been a good 5 years, and you know, hopefully it continues. If it doesn't, I've had a good time, but
a good run of it.
I think I've made a name for myself at the very least.
Anyway,
you know, we're all very vain as commentators. We like to be good, but we also like people to tell us we're good as well. So if there's anybody listening and wants to send me a message saying you're very good, I'll be like, thank you very much.
Love it. So what is the motorsport life like? Because I know you've mentioned, like, so obviously you come to do it for yourself, but you also go for your son. So kind of what is it like with the travel and all of that?
Intense at times. For meetings of this nature, we test on a Friday. So we have Fridays off school, but we can't leave on a Thursday until he's finished school. So, for example, we did Rowra. Was lucky because it was in the school holidays, but the van broke down on the way, so we had to then get it towed home, get into my dad's work van, pick the caravan up, which we don't normally bring to a race weekend when it's only the three of us coming. We sleep in the van to then get to Rowra, and it was 11 hours from Nottinghamshire. So if that was a normal day, we'd have missed all Friday practice because we wouldn't have got there. You know, for this it wasn't too bad. We were here for 7 o'clock. Some tracks were pulling in, like Landau, we pulled in at, like, it was just about getting dark, so it was like 9 o'clock, but it's a solid 5 hours. So
yeah,
you know, there's a lot of commitment goes into it. Like, I walk around and I send commentary forms out at the start of the year. We've got drivers coming from Plymouth, we've got drivers coming from Scotland down to Clay Pigeon in Dorset, or all the way up to Rowra if you're from the south. You know, not just for me in general, the commitment that people put in to allow their children, because generally that's, you know, obviously Cadet Kart Championship is 5 to 15, you know, primarily, to allow their children to basically live out their dream, you know, but with putting a helmet on, and whether they make it as a racing driver or not, but for 10 minutes every hour and 20 minutes, they feel like a Formula One driver.
Yeah.
Is, you know, it's commendable, you know, and you see the sort of efforts that people put in to, you know, just let their kids go racing, and the kids love it, and that's the main thing. Like, the kids, you know, you can see they enjoy it, you know, that there's always frustrations, things don't always go right, but I think that builds character.
Yeah,
you know, you go and do a team sport and you can not perform, but your team can still win, or you have a good game but your team gets beat, and there's a lot of other factors. You pretty much, you put a child in a situation where you put them into a seat And for 10 minutes, it's them encased in their helmet, in their own world. They're making decisions at 60 or 70 mile an hour, an inch off the back of another cart, anywhere between 5 and 15 years old, in a train of carts, and they're making decisions. They are very much in their own sort of make it or break it environment,
yeah,
where they have to, you know, in their mind, they have to go out and perform. You're putting a level of pressure on these things. And the bad days outweigh the good for 95% of the grid. But when them good days come, it means a lot to them.
Yeah.
You know, you'll have bad heats, you'll have bad days, the bad luck will come. You can be leading a race by 50 metres and the chain comes off. We saw an example, Ollie Naylor at Rauwer in junior Rotax had a great day, was leading the final, and he bounced over a curb. The exhaust moved with the springs and the engine started making a noise because the exhaust was slightly off. He didn't want his engine to blow up and pulled into the pit lane on the last lap,
yeah,
and handed a win over because he was looking after his car and there was nothing wrong with it. So to speak, it was making a different noise. And, you know, the disappointment then that he's had to then bounce back that following day. The resilience that kids in karting show, I think they don't know it yet, but it's building them up to be very, very strong in their later years.
Yeah.
We've got all serious there, haven't we? We've got all serious. I hope your next question is lighthearted.
What is your biggest achievement so far?
There's lots, and I don't really see what I do as an achievement. I like what I do. I think being asked to do Motorsport UK British Champs at Fulbeck in 2020, having only commentated for 18 months, was a good privilege,
yeah,
that I enjoyed. If Motorsport UK are listening, I wouldn't mind doing a few more. But I don't want to do Henry and Anthony out of jobs. But, you know, if they ever feel ill, give us a shout. But then again, everybody else in commentary wants the same gig. So yeah. I don't really see it as an achievement so much, and I know that sounds negative, but it's not. It's like, for me, whether it's a club meeting or a Motorsport UK British Champs meeting, I go out with the same level of enthusiasm as to what I would doing anything else. And I think that's how it should be, because somebody winning a club meeting could mean the same to them as it would winning a Motorsport UK British Championship. So you just go out and build it the same way. And like, I had to sort of, earlier on in the year, somebody had said that I'd said something that I hadn't. And I went back and made sure, and I was like, look, I said, I understand that I didn't say it, first of all, but I know that I am no Murray Walker, but my job is to make kids feel like superstars for the 10 minutes they watch each race back.
Yeah.
So if that is my biggest achievement, it sounds really cliche, but if I've made a driver feel like a superstar, that's an achievement for me. It's not a personal, I'm not in this to go and say, right, in 5 years I want to be commentating on Le Mans, or I want to be commentating on Formula One. Don't get me wrong, if somebody rings up and says, would you like to do it, the answer is very much yes. But I'm not doing this to get anywhere in it as a career. What happens. It's a subjective industry. For everybody that thinks I'm good, there'll be somebody that thinks I'm bad. I am okay with that, because I've watched other commentators, like football commentators, and I'm thinking, he is boring me. And I watch someone think, he's getting me really invested. And that's okay.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, luckily to my face, most people are fairly positive. You know, we'll get that. Sometimes you get the odd live chat comment going, who's this fella? You know, and sometimes you just have to skim over it and think, okay, right, I'll try and let that one brush off my back, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, you do have to have a little bit of a thick skin.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, generally everybody is fairly nice.
Yeah.
Like I said, I just try my best, and that's all I can do. And if people like it, they like it. And if they don't, they don't, you know. Luckily, I've fallen onto a couple of nice championships that seem to like what I do. But a lot of the time you are waiting for a door to open inadvertently in this sort of game. You'll get other commentators messaging going, I've been offered this, but I can't do it.
Yeah.
Am I okay to pass your number on and stuff like that? Yeah. And it's like, that's how opportunities generally arise. So you are, like, I picked up Janetta, but just because somebody was unavailable. And then they had, luckily on the Friday, they, one of the commentators they use was on a camera that day. So they pulled him off the camera and got him on commentary, but he had a clash on the Saturday, so he couldn't do the Saturday. So they rang me and I got the Saturday because somebody was originally unavailable. And then the second person who did the Friday, if he was available for the Saturday as well, I wouldn't have got the Saturday.
Yeah.
He was just there in the right place at the right time. The Sunday they'd already got somebody booked for anyway, because that was the main day. So they were having a feature day of that.
Yeah.
So they, I think they had Andy McEwen in for that day, who does British GT and stuff like that. I'd love to get that. That'd be something that I'd love to get to, because I like the sort of endurance side of things. Like, I do 24-hour race on commentary, and it's great because you don't necessarily have to talk about the races, because there's so much going on. You can do what I'm doing now and going off on a massive tangent. but that's good as well, because that gives it sort of the real feel to it. And that's why, like, we do stuff with, like, live chat comments, and we try and get everybody involved in that as well. And, you know, that helps keep the content going. And, the more people we get involved, you know, the better it is. And that's why throughout my Paddock show throughout the year, you did a crack incident at Landau on that, by the way. But I try not to speak to people more than twice.
Yeah.
So some people might think, oh, I'm being a bit rude. But if I've spoke to them at the previous round, I'll try not to speak to them again, because I want to get round as many people as possible. And if at the end of the year I've missed somebody, it's purely by just hard luck, unfortunately. Yeah. They might be out on track, because sometimes we used to do them at the end of a day, but some people have packed up and gone home. Whereas now we do it while the stuff's still going on. And I was walking up earlier and there was somebody walking down ready for their qualifying session, and just asked them how they felt they were going to do. And then you speak to somebody, they've already had theirs, but they're preparing then for their first heat.
Yeah.
So we get a lot more natural reaction out of that. I've ploughed into a few Parc Fermés this year where the gate's been shut, and I'm just like, right, get that open, we're going in. And it's like, I went in and I think I spoke to Harry Hurst Grover early in the year, and I'd gone, oh, how's it gone? And he went, well, it was going really well until the last lap. And I was like, oh, right. So he went, but he said, I think it could be okay, says, because I think someone's been disqualified in front of me. I went, okay, fair enough. So I ploughed straight in to try and find out who'd been disqualified. Yeah. Because it's like, well, if you're going to stick your head above the parapet, you might as well have some fun with it. You know, and we went in, and luckily the lad was like, yeah, do you know what? These things sort of happen. I think he hadn't been disqualified. I think he got dropped down in the end.
Yeah.
But, you know, he was still a little bit disappointed. But you're getting that live sort of reaction, which helps sometimes. You know, I'll take Amy Peacock as a driver, for example. If I go to interview her normally, she just doesn't respond. She's very shy. But if you speak to her after a race while the adrenaline's going, she'll give you a really good interview.
Yeah.
So you've got to sort of know who to go to at the right time. You know, if we're doing a paddock show and I find her, she will run away after a race where she's been involved in something and the adrenaline is up, she'll do a really, really good interview.
Yeah.
So it's sort of knowing and getting to know, but that goes back to sort of getting to know everybody as much as you can.
Yeah. It's quite like a community sport, I think, as well, because, like, especially with teams, and even if you're not in a team, you still find people, and you, like, just as I come most weekends and stuff, just to come and watch. But it's really nice to have that kind of community feel with it. Do you know what I mean?
I mean, The more competitive it gets, the more you lose that naturally.
Yeah.
You go to a big meeting where 90% of your paddock is in a team awning, and they go in and the doors get shut, and you do lose a little bit of that. But that is the competitive nature of motorsport. That's where everything matters.
Yeah.
Here in this championship, it's a little bit more relaxed. But, you know, it's serious when it needs to be serious, but it's relaxed when it needs to be. I think there's a place for both.
Yeah.
You know, and there'll always be that sort of spectrum of where people want to get to or what level they can compete at. I don't think anybody wants to see anybody not race. You know, we see it, you know, when you see somebody doesn't get out onto track and, like, people, like, jump onto carts, and you'll see carts with three or four people with different team wear on helping out, because they don't want people not being out on track.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's what karting should be about.
Yeah, I agree. So, completely different question. Have you got any plans for the near future? And kind of, if not, what would you like to achieve, like, further on?
I just want to keep doing what I'm doing, really. It's like every year a series comes to an end and you never know whether they're going to call you up for next year.
Yeah.
So I cover two championships at the moment. One, I cover a club championship. One, I cover a national championship. Now, at the moment, I'm quite lucky. None of the dates clash. So I can focus on both. There's a couple of other events as well that I've dropped into throughout the year. So British 24-hour kart race is a big one on the calendar. So if I could do what I've done this year, next year, and maybe, you know, have 16, 17 weekends out on commentary, that would be brilliant. If both series go, look, we're either not streaming or we want to go in a different direction, then naturally I'll be upset, but it is what it is.
Yeah.
This isn't a full-time job for me, so I'm not relying on it in the way that other people are. Sometimes this is their full-time job, so they sort of like, they have quite nervous winters.
Yeah.
You know, mine's just more nervous that I don't want calendar clashes, so I'm sort of more nervous that they're going to book out a series and then I'm going to have to make a decision.
Yeah.
As to what we sort of, you know, but then again, that'll open an opportunity for somebody else. So yeah. That's, you know, selfishly, I don't want that. I want all the stuff that I've done to keep me. Hopefully, you know, CKC, etc., have had a good season with me. I'm hosting the awards show at the end of the year as well, which has been a nice agreement that I've had with Darren that I think is going to be good. I think it'll aid the whole sort of atmosphere of it, you know, knowing all the drivers and being able to, rather than just say, oh, like in fifth place, you know, I can put a bit of a backstory to some of it, you know, to help build things up. I think, you know, sort of sell how tight some championships have been, or in some cases, how dominant a driver has been.
Yeah.
So that's quite nice. And that's something that I like to do. It'll be, you know, I'll end up hosting probably both championships. I do award shows at the end of the year. So that's always quite nice. I've dipped my toe in the last 18 months into a little bit of social media management as well. So I've got a full-time day job, commentary and social media management. So how I even find time to eat at times is busy. Particularly because at times like this weekend alone, obviously I've got commentary and three drivers racing. So I'm trying to keep on top of what they're doing as well. And, you know, even just sending messages sometimes, just going, oh, well done on heat one and stuff like that, just to sort of let them know that I'm on it.
Yeah.
It has been quite good. But, you know, the feedback we've had from that's been quite nice as well. I don't think I can really take much more on, so I'm not trying to grow some sort of social media empire, but it helps get a couple of drivers out there and get a bit of branding on them. Yeah. I know there's a fair few people that do it, and like we've sort of collaborated on a few things with a couple of other sort of media managers, which has been really quite nice throughout the year. And we all sort of like, you know, like someone will send me a reel that they've done for one of my drivers, which is nice. And you sort of go back and forth, and you always a bit of back patting. It's like, yeah, nice reel, and they're like, oh, you know, good graphic last week and that sort of thing. So that's all quite nice. It, you know, that's a quite a friendly environment.
Yeah.
You know, we all sort of see what we all do. I'm gonna go back to it again. I just love racing. I get giddy about it, but I love it. And it's like last weekend, like my lad went to, and we did a club meeting at Wombwell that we just went because he needed some track time. But there was a driver there. It was his first race meeting. So we did a little bit of setup work on his cart, helped them out. They had one or two teething problems because, as you do when you first start out, you turn up with a cart and very little else and no experience. And, you know, we helped out a little bit there. And, you know, but we've done that two or three times. And one of the drivers that we helped out when they started going beat us a few times for the first time last weekend at Wombwell. So, you know, but a good laugh then with his dad, because he was like, you know, maybe you shouldn't have helped us quite so much. And, you know, but it's great to see drivers develop, you know, and it's good to see, like, I've been lucky enough to see my own son come from the back and watch him develop as a driver. But it's great to see sort of drivers that I've saw 18 months ago turn up as a novice, really, for their race meeting, now competing at the sharp end of grids, you seem like, you know, even just from a spectator standpoint, like, you get so much satisfaction out of seeing progression that you just can't help love motorsport. You know, and I've always had it, like I said, I've always had that sort of background, you know, would have liked to have done a little bit more racing, but, you know, other sporting activities and other things sort of got in the way. So I'm not upset by it. I have enjoyed what I've done. But really competitively, like, I've not raced since commentary, or pretty much since my lad started. As soon as he started, that was me done. Focuses purely on him, because, as you know, with karting and all forms of motorsport, you know, it'd be cheaper if he bought a football. We'll give it that. It's not a, you know, it's not a cheap hobby.
Yeah.
When you get into things, it can be as expensive or as, you know, as cheap as you want it to be. But if you want to be competitive, even putting in test days is, you know, you're looking at 30, 40 quid for the track time, and then you're taking life out of tyres and things like that. And so you're looking at, you know, an expensive day in the grand scheme of things. But, you know, it's a wonderful environment. You'll always see, you know, excitement going a bit too far.
Yeah.
You know, but that is no different to being on the side of a football pitch, parents jumping up and down. Everybody just wants their best for theirs, you know. But all in all, you know, last night, you know, here at Wilton Mill, final round of the season, we were stood and there was me and around 20 other parents. There were some hire kart racers on and we were just having a really good time.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't know any of the drivers involved. We were basically referring to them by orange helmet, GoPro man. There was a guy in a Canadian suit. He was Maple Man. And we were just basically, before each race, we went, right, I am rooting for him. And we just had a really, really good time.
Yeah.
But I'd have had that same time if it wasn't, even if my lad wasn't here. Like, I didn't need to be down at Clay Pigeon till the Sunday morning because my lad didn't race it. But I was still down by midday on Saturday because I wanted to watch the qualifying and the heats and speak to parents and, you know. And the best thing I think I've had out of this season, and I'm sure he won't mind me mentioning it. I'm going to mention it anyway, so I'll find out in due course. I was speaking to them at a winter round at Three Sisters, and then they've done this season as well, is a young driver in Honda Cadet, Archie Loveridge. He's autistic and doesn't talk to a lot of people but he watches live streams, and there's three commentators, Henry Bowder, Anthony Jordan, who do British Champs, and myself. And he'll have a great conversation with me, but somebody else walks past, he won't talk to them because his autism won't allow it. But because he's heard my voice and because I've gone out of my way, he had a crash at Clay Pigeon and I was stood watching at that corner and he stayed calm because he heard my voice there.
Yeah.
But his dad said he wouldn't have been like that if it wasn't your voice, because he recognises it and you're one of only three people in the paddock that he doesn't know that he'll talk to. And I love that.
Yeah.
Because
I think it's nice to know that you're liked and to know that you can comfort someone.
Yeah, and he went, you know, he had an off. He got pushed into the wall. And I'd said to Marshall, I went, would you prefer him over the other side of the barrier? And I said, yeah. I said, Archie, are you okay with me lifting you over? And he went, yeah, not a problem. So he lifted him up over the barrier and put him down. And his dad went, I'm really happy you were there, because if you weren't, by chance, he wouldn't have been so calm.
Yeah.
And that's brilliant then. And now I know, like, we know, I've done an interview with him on a paddock show, but I know that if it wasn't somebody that he recognised, he, you know, and, but then the perception that he would have come across as not talking, and it's like someone, oh, he's not able to, you know.
Yeah.
And I think we see that a lot. And I think, particularly when you see drivers like that, you know, I've grown up through my commentary. The first time I commentated, there was a driver, Sandro Ballesteros, who is exactly the same. But, you know, you put him in a motorsport environment and he is, you know, when I use it in a thing, but he wouldn't stand out because he is the same as everybody else.
Yeah.
You put him in a different environment and he stands out because he's not able to function in the way because of that autism. But I can interview him and he'll give me a great interview because he's talking about something that he's passionate about.
Yeah.
And it's the same with Archie as well. And I get great, really good interviews with him, and he'll speak to me. But if you were to talk to him about football on a Thursday,
yeah,
you won't get the same level out of him. But he talks about it because he's so passionate.
Yeah, I love that. So, last couple of questions are just very random ones. I ask these to everyone. So, first one, who are your motorsport heroes?
As a kid, we go back to the autographs ones. I remember watching my dad race, and there's people won't know these names, but I'll mention them anyway, like Norman Ross, Bob Moseley, Carl Moseley, Anthony Ross. Watching them drive and the way they drove was brilliant. From a more mainstream, I grew up in the Nigel Mansell era. So the first driver I remember watching would have been sort of Mansell, 91, 92 as a young kid, then watching him go do IndyCar. You know, it was always Formula One because at the time, that was the only sort of mainstream sort of thing on TV. Touring cars was there, but you didn't see a lot of it. It wasn't sort of, you know, and you look through the newspapers and stuff and it was all Formula One. So, you know, you watch that type of thing. You know, as I've got more into it now, this will sound really cheesy, but as a commentator and as a parent, my hero is my lad.
Yeah.
I love watching him race. I love watching him succeed. But I love how he is out of the car. Like, I don't see him on a race weekend when I'm not commentating. Because he finishes his race, he'll tell me, he'll tell his granddaddy, he'll be like, bit oversteery here, I need a bit more front end grip. And then I won't see him for an hour because he's off with his friends.
Yeah.
And then he doesn't see them for a month, and then he sees them at another race meeting, and he's off with his friends. And
yeah.
Every night he's with different people. And I think I love that. Yeah, and it's, like I say, really, really cheesy.
Yeah.
But my heroes growing up were people that I'd watched. My motorsport hero now is my son.
Yeah.
Seems a bit weird because it's always people that should be a bit older and people you look up to and that sort of thing. But yeah, I love watching him race. And he's where we're at now.
Yeah. I think that's really, really nice. I mean, definitely when I have kids, I'd want to put them into motorsport because I just think that would be so fun. Yeah, I love that. And last one, if you could get a paddock pass to any race in the world, where would you go?
I'd probably say Le Mans because I've never been.
Yeah.
Some of my friends went this year and they were like, oh, you should come. And the invite was there. And I was like, at the time, I was like, was really busy with work and I didn't know what was coming on at the time to commentary front. I wanted to keep my dates clear. And I'd have loved to have gone to the centenary one. So I wouldn't mind Le Mans. I've been to one or two Formula One races and I think it's not quite what it used to be now. I think it's, you know, the racing is a little bit more subdued. Plenty of things that sort of like, you know, it needs to be a little bit closer, of course. And I think the fact that the cars are 18 miles long these days don't really aid, you know, good racing. So I've started to edge more now towards touring cars. You know, spent a bit more interest this year in British GT because one of my drivers on the social media is aligned to a British GT team and they do Le Mans as well in Optimum Motorsport. So hopefully the more I name drop them, the more invites I'll get to stand in their garage. But that was the thing, like we went to Alton Park on the practice day for British GT earlier in the year on the Friday. And they were like, oh, just come in and have a quick look. And then later on in the year, we'd done British 24 Hour and there was a guy in one of the teams who does GT4. And he was like, oh, if you're ever in the paddock, just send me a message and I'll let you have a look around the garage and stuff like that. So that's really nice. It's almost like the odd sort of perk and privilege.
Yeah.
You know, you're sort of playing the sort of card. But yeah, I'd love to go to Le Mans eventually. We've done the higher kart race there this year and went and had a look around the museum, which is a must for anybody if they go, even not on the Le Mans weekend. But it's great. They've got a big circular room with a model car of every car that's ever competed.
Oh my gosh.
From the first race to last year's, they've got a model of every one. So I was going around finding the two Optimum Motorsport entries from 21 and 22, sending pictures to the team boss going, look what I've found. He's like, yeah, I know. He said, I've got exactly the same two at home in my sort of like my room of memorabilia and stuff like that. But yeah, Le Mans would be lovely for me to go to. I think that's probably the one.
Yeah, I think I'd love to go to Le Mans. I think that's just, it's quite iconic as well, isn't it?
Yeah, as well, I think, you know, I want to go, but I think I probably want to wait till my lad's like 12 or 13 in a couple of years and go for the first time with him and see it with him. It'd be nice to go with some sort of friends, but I want him to sort of experience it for the first time when I do, which I think will be lovely. Yeah, definitely Le Mans then.
Yeah, I love it. Okay, well, thank you for coming on the podcast.
Well, pleasure. Thank you for inviting me. It's been wonderful. And hopefully it's not been too long, because I know I do like the sound of my own voice at times.
Thank you for listening to the Paddock Pass podcast with me, Evie Spencer. Make sure to follow this podcast for more episodes and head over to my socials for more motorsport content.